The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, working with the world's leading broadcasters and equipment suppliers to transform industry standard technologies and workflows.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up this week, Foxy is back as Dr. Fox joins United DJs for a new twist on the Sunday chart show. We'll find out what the former Capital and Magic jock thinks of the current state of the UK radio industry and much more. And of course, at the end, we've got some more fantastic memories in David Lloyd's Radio Moments. Strap yourselves in for a long one.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Nick Hassel.
But first, no Roy this week. Just one, well, two tragic stories to reflect on. News came through on Monday morning from Radio Wales that Chris Needs had died suddenly over the weekend. And then on Tuesday night, we learned that Tomo, Andrew Thomas, had also died suddenly. Tomo had worked at Radio Cymru as well as commercial stations Radio Ceredigion, Radio Carmarthenshire, Radio Pembrokeshire, Bridge FM and Nation Radio, and he was due to return to the group with a new Sunday night show this coming weekend. The group's putting out a special tribute programme to Tomo in its place. Well, here's Chris Need's death being reported on BBC Radio Wales on Monday.
10 o'clock, time for the news. Here's Tom.
One of BBC Radio Wales's longest-serving and most recognisable presenters, Chris Needs, has died. He was 68. He was best known for his late-night weekday show, which he presented for almost two decades. Callers to the show became part of what he terms the Chris Needs Friendly Garden Association, which attracted tens of thousands of members around the world. The editor of BBC Radio Wales, Colin Patterson, has described him as an amazing character and all-round entertainer. Elsewhere this morning.
Good morning, everybody. Owen Money here. We're all in mourning on BBC Radio Wales today with the passing of Chris Needs. He was a charismatic man, a man who will never be forgotten on BBC Radio Wales. We all are presenters. People listen to us all. They could be doing the shopping in the car. They could be in the house listening to the radio, but people that listen to Chris Needs listen to him because he was on from 10 o'clock till the early hours of the morning, and they all listened because they loved him. And this is one of his favourite songs.
Owen Money there. Well, what was to be Chris's last show was on Friday night. Here's how he signed off in his trademark style.
Well, time once again for the BBC Home Service Radio Wales to close down for yet another night. Do hope you've enjoyed our programmes throughout the day, and maybe we'll have the pleasure of your company a little bit later on, 5 o'clock, as we join the lovely Vicky Blight for breakfast. And the Radio Wales Breakfast Show with Ollie Hyde starts at 7. Owen at 9. Money for nothing. Don't miss it. Brilliant. 8 is in at 4. Bethan at 7 and Adam Walton at 10. Give him my best regards. Special, special thanks indeed tonight to Gabe on the phones, and thank you to you for letting me into your home. Thank you to Javid on the buttons. Thank you to Linus in the swivel chair, and thank you to Sean Howell in the newsroom. But most of all, can I say thank you to you at home or in work or in the car listening online, doesn't matter where. Thank you so much indeed for your company and your support and making the show what it is. And don't forget, we're here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday nights, 10 till 1, BBC Radio Wales. Well, so is that for me to say from myself, Chris Needs, and all the staff here at BBC Wales Broadcasting House in Cardiff, may I bid you good night. Nostra. Cysgwch yn dywel. Tan os lun yr un amser, cymerwch ofal. Good night. May God bless you. Once again, Garden, thank you so much indeed. Coaching of a fabulous weekend. We'll do it again on Monday with style. From everybody here at Broadcasting House, myself in Cardiff Bay, Nostauch, buenas noches, bon oui, Nostauch, good night.
So it might be that you've never even heard of Chris Needs, but Chris was a massive star in Wales with his late night show. Greg James was among the radio industry fans. And this partly came about after Greg was sent a clip of a caller to the Friendly Garden, which he played out on Radio 1.
I wanted to play you this because it's a little brain teaser for you.
Oh, OK, yeah, I like a brain teaser. I, like
not that I'm gonna, I don't think I'm going to start doing this on the show. It feels a bit, in the nicest possible way, a bit Steve Wright.
Right, OK, yeah.
But I know, you know, he's a hero, Steve Wright, but he's got that kind of thing covered.
Right.
However, I will make an exception today.
Is it a good one?
I think so. This was sent in by Chlynos Jones. Now, Chlynos is from Wales.
Right.
And spotted this on the Chris Needs show on BBC Radio Wales last week.
Okay.
I love Chris Needs. Incredible voice, incredible show. He's got a huge following as well. Well, I thought the callers on this show and on Radio 1 were brilliant.
They are the best.
But BBC Radio Wales, another level. I'm kind of jealous that we don't get callers like this. Here's today's brain teaser.
Right, give me a question, if you don't mind, please.
Right then. What goes up a drain pipe down and down a pipe, down a drain pipe up? Oh, sorry, what cannot go down a drain pipe up and go down, up a drain pipe down?
You made hard work of that, didn't you?
I think I said it right, actually.
I know, hang on, let me say. What goes up a drain
pipe? What can go down a drain pipe and not go up? I walk on up a drain pipe and can't go down.
Let me say it. I've got it written down now, right? It says, what goes up a drain pipe down, but not down a drain pipe up?
No. What cannot go... What can go up a drain pipe and cannot go down, and what cannot go down a drain pipe and go up?
I knew I should have had a bank job. I know I should have. I know. Well, I haven't got a clue what you're talking about now. I've never been so confused in my life. Do it again slowly.
Right then, now. Wait. What can go up a drain pipe down?
Yeah.
This is the way this is actually pronounced.
Right.
What can go up a drain pipe down and go down a drain pipe up?
It changes every time.
Yeah, but not down a drain pipe up.
Yes.
But you never said that. Oh, what goes up a drain pipe
what?
Down?
No. What can go down a drain pipe up? Cannot go down a drain pipe, but not up. And what can I go up a drain pipe, but cannot go down?
Well, if anyone can answer that, you're a better man than I am. That's all
right,
I can
Chris.
Say. We've had about.
Are you? Are you? But anyway, right?
I've got a headache now.
Oh.
Amazing! That happened on the radio.
That's the best phone call ever made. We can just cancel phones now. We don't need them anymore. That's the ultimate phone call.
At the end of all that, 2 minutes.
Wow.
I'm going, what goes up and not down up a drain pipe up?
No, wait.
No.
Cannot.
Down and up a drain pipe down. And at the end of it, he goes, anyway, bud, how are you? What? You're on the radio. Yes, what a legend Chris Needs is. Hi, Stefan. And Arabella, who says, that was unbelievable. My mum loves Chris Needs. He is a legend. He is indeed. The way he kept his cool throughout that phone call, which lasted 89 minutes, was remarkable.
Just brilliant. There was a lovely tribute show on Radio Wales on Monday night, which is worth a listen back on Sounds. Here's the station's current editor, Colin Patterson.
You know, I'm not from Wales originally, you can tell from my accent. And I remember decades ago, like a long time ago, somebody telling me about Chrissy's programme and saying, there's this guy in Wales, he's late at night and he's got a piano. And if you phone up, he will take requests and he'll play the piano for you live on air. And it was one of those moments when you tuned in that you just thought that if you took that to any radio executive anywhere in the world, they would say, no chance, you're not doing it. But it was one of those, it might, you know, it's so mad, it might just work. And that's exactly what happened. You know, quite often, and you know this, we you know, ask presenters to really think about who our audience are and to try and understand the audience. I think the big difference with Chris was he didn't have to understand the audience because he was the audience, you know. Had conversations between between him and his callers was just like earwigging and a conversation over the back fence in the valleys. And I think that's the real difference. It wasn't, you know, I certainly a program I wasn't in charge of as such. It was, you know, Chris drove the show. And I think the big thing there is just its authenticity, and it was real, and it was Welsh. And you look around the country now in terms of the way that radio stations and television stations are going, and there's genuinely nothing like Chris Needs on the radio, certainly not at that time of night. And I think actually that should be a great source of pride for us all. So as the boss of a radio station, you listen to it and you sort of think, are we really doing this? You know, you would just go from, you know, Europop into classical music, into the Birdie song. And Chris held it all together, and I think everybody probably had a Chris Needs moment where they would look at the person sitting next to them in the car and think, is this really happening? But you know, the really interesting thing is how many people's guilty pleasure he was, and the number of senior and high profile people in Welsh life that are getting in touch today to say that, you know, they were listeners and they were fans, is incredible. And you know, we there's lots of debates about the BBC and what we do and how we do it. You know, I've often made the case, and Chris would have made the case himself, there is no better example, I don't think, of public service broadcasting than that programme. You know, and you particularly, if you look at over the last few months, as we've all been coming together to get through COVID, Chrissy's programme was all about public service, because every night at 10 o'clock, or we had him on at 9 o'clock for a while at the beginning of COVID for a bit longer, but every night as you were going to bed, you knew that Chris would be there, and that reassuring voice, and he was then also a vehicle to bring other voices together, and that's public service radio.
Well, let's get a word with the former Radio Wales editor, Steve Austins, who's with us on the Radio Today programme. He himself spent the best part of 20 years at Broadcasting House in Llandaff. What an incredibly sad week, really, for Welsh broadcasting, Steve.
Hugely sad, Stuart. I mean, Chris had been with the station for around about 25 years, you know, part of the furniture, that evening show, incredibly, incredibly successful. You could almost prescribe it on the NHS. That's how essential that show was to Wales in general, and the people of Wales. But to lose Tomo as well within the last 24 hours as well, I mean, God, you know, what you know, along with Tony Wright a few weeks ago, just real losses to Welsh broadcasting.
And when Chris first arrived at Radio Wales, I think he was on daytimes before he found that home in the evenings. What was he like in the early days, you know, when you were first there as a producer?
So my time with Chris actually goes back to Touch AM. So I was I was in the newsroom as a kind of trainee reporter when Chris was on breakfast at Touch. And, you know, I mean, there was the force of energy, there was the bundle of nature, and you know, and there he was at breakfast kind of doing what the rest of Wales got to hear him do kind of for night times for so many years. So my time with Chris had gone way back. Yeah, I mean, he presented a mid-morning magazine show when he came to the station first. It was about finding his feet, but then when Julie Barton took over as editor, she kind of persuaded him to go to the evenings. I think Chris was a bit reluctant at first, because I think there was always that sense of, will I have any listeners? Well, he built that slot up to be his own, and to be a real icon of what BBC Radio Wales was to become.
And I mean, I know, because we have family in Cardiff, and over the years we'd arrive quite late at night with the kids asleep in the car. And whenever I was kind of coming down from Ross-on-Wye, we'd flick on Radio Wales as soon as we could get it, just to kind of listen to what was going to happen on his late show, because it was bonkers in terms of the music, yeah. The callers as well. And obviously Chris made it very special. You had no idea what was going to happen. I guess when you were editor, that was quite a difficult thing. If this show was quite free and not really formatted in a way.
Do you know, the funny thing is the minute that the fader went up, I trusted him implicitly. That's not to say I didn't trust him implicitly when the fader went down, but nonetheless, he was, the only way I can really describe him was he was a chef. He completely knew what to do with all the ingredients he had. So, yes, he would go from Kylie to German techno into Don't Cry For Me Argentina and think nothing of it, right? There's so, there were no jingles in the middle or anything like that. There were just, you know, the 9-minute sequence and off you went, and the listeners understood it. But the way that actually people felt that they could actually give him a call, tell him how they felt, tell him about kind of, you know, the day they'd had, the conversations they'd had with their daughter, with the doctor, with whoever. And Chris would sit there and he would listen and he would reflect back. But it allowed people to kind of just feel like this was their show. This was their extended family, the garden, as it became known. But it also allowed these incredible moments of comedy, you know, where actually the amount of times I would get sitcoms pitched to me about, you know, we want to do a sitcom about a radio station. It's just like, let me stop you there, because nothing you will write will be funnier than what I'm listening to Chris Needs on a weeknight. And that's not because it was intentional comedy. It's not because Chris was playing with the audience. He just knew that actually, if he let them talk, it was gold, and that actually it would kind of be incredibly funny and incredibly great company for those people listening.
And I think the reaction we've seen from listeners, you know, phoning in and getting in contact with Radio Wales this week just speaks volumes about how much they did love him as well.
Oh, totally. Totally and utterly. And you know, the love was reciprocal. And, you know, he knew that actually his show was nothing without the listeners, and kind of and vice versa. And you know, there was a period during those 20 years where the BBC got into all sorts of a muddle over competitions, and at one point there was just a blanket ban on competitions. Well, that, you know, that killed Chris for a good while, because the competitions and the silly kind of things. What am I thinking right now? Give me a call, 03700 100 110. You know, and the phone lines would light up. But you know, that kind of throwaway stuff was absolutely the lifeblood of the show. But actually, it was a very, very clever device, because actually, yes, people would go on and they'd take part in the competition, but then they'd spend 10 minutes on the phone talking about life and talking about kind of, you know, and that's where the real gold came, really.
And I guess some of the best spontaneous sounding radio shows are ones that are actually planned to the letter. So was he a planner, or was he a just go with it and see what happens kind of guy? I'm guessing the latter.
He was a bit, yeah, there was, I think the thing with Chris is that actually he was a born entertainer. So he was kind of, you know, a very, very talented pianist. He traveled the world kind of playing keyboards. He played keyboards for Bonnie Tyler, but worked in umpteen working men's clubs, kind of. So he understood entertainment inside out and backwards. So I think what he needed to do was basically have a bag of records, quite literally at times, and just a format in his head, and then he would take it from there. And you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, he will say himself, he didn't always have the, you know, it wasn't kind of that every night kind of you had those drainpipe callers, but actually kind of when they came, boy, did they come.
And as you said, even more of a shock just 24 hours later to find out about Tomo dying suddenly. Now, Tomo, again, you know, a big voice, a big personality in Welsh radio over many, many years, and you hired him at Radio Wales for a few shows as well.
Yeah, so he'd come in, so Bets and Powers brought him in to present the afternoon show on BBC Radio Cymru. You know, up until that point, his broadcasting had all been done in English on Radio Ceredigion and Carmarthenshire, and throughout the Nation Network. And he and I kind of got on very well from the start. I knew he had stuff that he could offer. He actually stood in for Chris a couple of times. He stood in for Owen Money a few times, you know, but the thing I remember about Tom more than anything else is just the boundless energy. I mean, he would, I was in the main office, kind of, you know, there wasn't a kind of like a manager's office per se, but I would sit at the other end of the room to the way that people came into the building, and you just see the doors bellow open, and it's just like he'd be walking through like a peacock. Steve, where are you? Steve, Stephen. And you know, it's just like, you know, there's no ears, no graces. I understand he did that to the director of BBC Wales a fair few times as well. So, you know, he was just a bundle of energy and enthusiasm. And he was, you know, one of the most genuine people that you could ever meet, Tomo, and a real, real loss to broadcasting in Wales.
A very sad week. Steve, good to catch up with you. Sad it's under these circumstances, but thanks for talking to us.
No problem at all, Stuart.
Steve Austin's former editor of BBC Radio Wales, reflecting on the sad passing this week of both Chris Needs and Tomo. Still to come on the Radio Today programme, David Lloyd's Radio Moments. And next, we've got Foxy.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Next on the Radio Today programme, the return of Dr. Fox.
Yep, they're back. The Boomtown Rats' first album for 35 years at number 5. Get up home, dancing by yourself at the muck of tonight. Always time for a bit of a headbang. John Coughlin's Quo and Lockdown, number 4. The super classy Dion and Paul Simon. Song for Sam Cooke at 3. And the uber catchy Tide, like said Fred now. So who's our first ever number one? Limahl, his first single for 9 years. His last was called London for Christmas. Enjoy our first ever number one song on the Heritage Chart. What a lovely song, Still in Love, Limahl. Tops our first ever Heritage Chart Top 30 exclusive to United DJs Radio. Right, thank you very much indeed for listening. I never thought I'd be handing over to Emperor Rathko in Los Angeles, but that's what we're doing. Coast to Coast comes up in just a second. Get in contact if you want. United DJs Radio on Facebook, or you can always get in contact on Twitter at United DJs Radio. Right, have a lovely afternoon. We'll see you next Sunday.
Yes, he's back with a new weekly Heritage Chart show on Digital Station United DJs, and I'm pleased to say he's with us on the Radio Today programme this week. Foxy, welcome.
It's actually sounded quite good, didn't it? Sounds highly immodest, I know, but actually it's interesting. Just I think when you first start out in radio, there's always that cringe factor listening to your own air checks back, but it's something I used to always do. Literally every week I'd make sure I recorded a show and listened to them back just to see if you're falling into any dreadful bad habits. But so having not done that for 5 years, you know, I love countdowns, and there was always an energy to them and a fun and obviously a direction. You're always travelling towards that number one, which always meant it was exciting. So actually, that sounded pretty good.
And we couldn't help but notice, we've got to get this out of the way first, you're using the jingle again. So Dr. Fox is back.
Yeah, look, I mean, I remember years ago, there was a moment at Capital when I think Parkey was trying to urge Kid Jensen to be David Jensen. I mean, you're not a kid anymore, right? But the thing was, he was called Kid because he was like 18 when he was on Radio Luxembourg all those years ago, and it's a nickname that stuck. And sometimes if the public know you as something, it seems really weird. It's hard to get a brand, inverted commas, but if it actually sticks and they know you as something, don't fight it. And I think for years and years, you know, Dr. Fox was a nickname that had started from doing a late night show on a Saturday that was a bit, you know, risky and fun and full of energy and the sound of a fun young London, right, 10 to 2. Originally on a Saturday night when it was the Dr. Fox's late night surgery. And it was I made the jingle up and sort of knocked it together using razor blades and tape in the old splicing way.
And that's you on the that's you on the FOX, isn't it? That's you.
Oh, it is. It's me, right? That's like, well, because I was the only bloke sitting in the studio, so we made it, and it was just one of those jingles that stuck. And I can guarantee this, you know, that all these years on, I must have made that, I don't know, 30 years ago. People still literally every week will sing that jingle to me. They won't just say, hello, doctor. They'll go, doctor, doctor, fucks. It's just one of those things. And sometimes you go, don't fight it. I mean, if that's what people know me as, and it is a great jingle, right? So you put it on and it's just, well, actually, thank you very much, Robert Palmer and Bad Case of Loving You, the song. So, you know, it's not like I wrote it. But it's a great jingle and people know it. It sticks in their head and then they know it's me back on air.
Yeah, that and Patch App's got all the hits.
But it's true, you know. But hang on, I'm working with Mike Reed, 275 and 285, Mike Reed, National Radio 1. I mean, there are jingles that people, you know, and, Gary Davis. There are certain jingles that people have had over the years that really have worked. And you can't, it's like some songs stick in people's head. There are certain catchphrases from adverts stick in people's head. You know what? Look, there are certain jingles that stick in people's head. And just think, well, okay, brilliant. There was a time at Magic, obviously, when I started there, and that jingle, you know, that was like to start with, I was almost the antichrist to Magic listeners. Like, what? You've employed Dr. Fox here at nice, mellow Magic. Are you serious? But obviously, it was a plan Parky and I had, and Andrea Vidler, to slowly ease into it. But yeah, the jingle was slightly probably inappropriate, certainly for early Magic. By the end of it, I probably could have used it. But actually, we didn't really, but I was always itching to, in a way, crank out the Dr. Fox jingle because people know it, right? And they love it.
Right, let's pull it back before we get accused of being too geeky. So this new show...
An hour on one jingle. Yeah. It's probably a bit much, to
be
fair.
I don't know. So started last weekend. Tell us what it's about. What's the point of it?
It's called The Heritage Chart. And for a couple of years, Tony Prince, who started UDJ, and Mike Reed have been sort of saying, come on, Foxy, come on, let's get you back on air here. You know, this is, you could do a great show here. And I've been doing other things, I'll be honest, and have slightly resisted because, bizarrely, I'm not really a big nostalgia freak. So I don't want to live in the past and sort of try and recreate the old sound of Pirates or Luxie or... I like living in the now and the present. Hmm. And so there are things clearly we can learn from past radio that had an energy and a feel to it and some great personalities, and the way jocks were was probably way more entertaining in many respects than they are nowadays, to be honest. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But I didn't want it in a way just try and wallow in the past. So my thing has always been, well, let me just, I'm going to sit and wait and hear how this thing pans out. But when Reedy called me, it was only about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and said, right, I've got this idea. I want you to do this thing. What do you think? Let's talk about it. And we met up at a garden centre, very rock and roll, out near where he lives, to discuss over a nice pot of tea. And it just seemed like a very good idea. A, I like countdowns. So it's always good. Everyone loves a countdown. You know, look at bank holiday TV schedules. There's often the 30 greatest, you know, cock-ups by celebrities. People like any form of a countdown that starts at a number and ends up at... And the number one mess up, the number one song, the number one, you know, embarrassing moment is. So we tend to like that because you know you're building towards something that hopefully is the biggest, the number one, the top, by the time you get to the end of the show. So here was an idea that he put to me, saying there are loads of artists who we have grown up with and loved, so you could, inverted commas, call them heritage artists, that... No one's playing anymore. Literally no mainstream radio stations will touch, partly because maybe they're old, maybe they've been around, maybe for whatever reason, the sort of young, trendy, hip program controller meetings now, or playlist meetings, don't think that they would fit in the modern sound of their station. And so when you look at the top 10, you know, so Reedy and I were looking at, okay, so what would probably be our top 10? Well, Paul Weller, Michael Stipe from REM, Howard Jones, Nick Kershaw, John Coughlan from Status Quo, Limahl, Right Said Fred. I mean, these are all big household names, names that have had millions of record sales behind them, all had massive number ones in the past, and yet no one, I mean, no one touches them. maybe for the exception of Weller.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think Radio 2 are not playing some of these artists?
Well, radio, I mean, it's a weird one because, you know, with this whole issue of, you know, where's the BBC going to go more and more, and it's never going to go away and it shouldn't go away, is how's it going to get funded? And so it comes back to what should the BBC be? You know, obviously, when I was a kid, there was BBC One and BBC Two, and there were four radio channels and some local. Yeah. Now they've got so many TV channels, they've got so many radio stations, and you go, I'm sorry, you just don't need them all, and we as the public shouldn't have to fund them. You see, my kids, they never watch terrestrial TV. Kids don't now. They don't watch BBC or ITV. They watch Netflix, Apple TV. To be fair, so do we as well. And you go, so, okay, if I can get all that for £5.99 a month, why are you telling me I've got to pay 160 quid to watch the BBC, which I don't? Or just to have a television? So the whole funding model of it has got to change. And there's this growing pressure, quite rightly so, that a lot of people go, what have I just... Don't ever watch the BBC, OK? It's like an opt-in or opt-out. I'm never going to watch it, never going to listen to BBC radio, so can I just pay nothing? I think if any you sat in any court, they'd go, well, of course you don't have to pay for it if you're not using it. So we've got this old, antiquated funding model of the BBC and the licence fee that really needs addressing. Now, I know they've got this new director general they have. Obviously, Tim Davey is an interesting guy because I used to work with him. What he was our first ever contact with Pepsi. So he was this smart young guy at Pepsi who was in charge of, from their side, the Pepsi chart. And a really smart guy, clearly, and a very commercially minded guy. So I think it's interesting that the Beeb have chosen someone who's very commercially minded to be in that job now, because you need someone who's very commercially minded, because he's going to have a lot of battles ahead of him when people are going to say, sorry, you cannot justify Radio 3 anymore. You've got Classic FM, you've got Scarlet. If people want Classic, there are a zillion places to get it. It's one of the most expensive networks to run. Don't bother anymore. Radio 2, what are you trying to be? Okay, you're sort of Radio 1.5 now. So when I was a kid growing up, and then you had Terry Wogan and Jimmy Young and these guys, it was for older people. Now it seems to be trying to be a bit younger and trendier, and I think there's a big hole in the market, and partly that big hole is, I think that's where UDJ is trying to fill this hole. Partly, I think, as well, because playlists have got very centralised. I mean, radio in many respects now, it's a really sad case that you've got the BBC, you have Global Radio, and you have Bauer. That's pretty much what you've got in Britain. That's it. And so those three companies, all in London, dominate what people listen to around the country. And of course, let's be honest, no decision that Global or Bauer have made in the last 10 years has ever been about making more exciting, entertaining radio. It's all been about how can we make radio and bigger brands for less money. And I understand the commercial constraints. I'm not being, you know, ridiculous here. We live in a commercial world. It's expensive, you know, putting on quality shows, building big studios and the rest of it, and paying the PRS. Look, this is business. And in that entertainment area, there are lots of other platforms now and other ways that people can get their music. So if I'm a kid and I want to listen to music, you know, do my kids ever listen to the radio? Never. Never. They don't turn the radio on. They're on Spotify, right? So that's how they get their music. So there's challenges all around. But what it's meant is you get one person sitting in Leicester Square, one person sitting in Golden Square, who's pretty much telling all these different stations what to play at what time. And what that means is you get a very sanitized... I know they're building national brands, and that's very easy to sell. Good. Okay, so that makes it easier to make a profit and money. But on the other hand, it doesn't make better radio. It really doesn't. And what we've lost is we've lost any localness. So when I started in radio, I started a little station, Radio Wyvern, part of the ILR, Independent Local Radio Network, of all these different stations that are all privately owned. Right, one by one, they started to have financial problems. They got bought up by other ones, and they started to merge. So now they've all merged, and so we've got Bauer Global. And they do great jobs, and they've created these big brands, but there are big holes now. There's nothing local. All these small stations, you know, you've got one show a week that comes from that station. Well, eventually, you know eventually what's going to happen. The Radio Authority are just going to have to say, do you know what, guys? Yeah, you don't have to have a local show, local breakfast or local drive time. And We've been trying to hang on to this, cling on to this localness, but it ain't going to happen. Yeah. So just make, it's just a national brand. You got heart, you got magic, you got capital, you got kiss, that's it, right? And I think we have lost out a little bit in the richness of the whole thing. And of course, because of that, the jocks can't really say anything apart from, hey, I've got another 30 grand to give away if you listen to Bruno Mars and Pink on Monday morning. No, but really, it's really honed down, I think, part of... Me and Chris Tarrant used to have these great conversations, and it was always that moment in some of the jocks meetings back at Capital when you'd have like the Rage R meeting. So Parky would tell us the Rage R. Normally they were great, which was brilliant. And then it's like, Silver, you guys got any questions? And there often was that moment, was like, oh God, what are they going to ask? And me and CT, maybe because we're, I don't know, we were just this way inclined. We go, yeah, Parky. So when we're out there meeting all the listeners at all the gigs and the things that we do, one thing comes up all the time. And trust me, anyone who's listening to this podcast right now is about to go, oh my God, I've been asked that before, jocks. People go, so why do you play the same songs all the time? Right. To be, look, this was going on 30 years ago, yeah. So this is not a new thing. Now they'll be going, they'll be pulling their hair out going, why do you play the same 15 songs all the time back to back? Because it's sort of almost become that, right? But then it was, even then, it was, why do you play the same songs? Yeah, why don't you play twice as many songs half as often? So we go, Parky, please answer. Parky did not like this question ever, but we keep asking it. And he'd say, well, when you look at basically, I won't do the Scottish accent all the time, but when you do Foxy, no, oh my God, fear of God, no. When
dear
you,
boy.
Yeah, oh dear boy, really? You like that song, do you? Play it at home, don't play it on the radio. Okay, there are so many Parkisms, but actually a brilliant guy to work for as long as you could take it and you were thick-skinned, because we had lots of success, let's be honest. And his answer would be, okay, people, if you look at the average listening time, listen, I don't know, 25 minutes or whatever it may be. There's so many other stations to listen to, that number slightly going down, so we've got to make sure that when they tune in, they're always hearing the biggest songs. And you kind of go, well, there's a logic there. But then you go, yeah, but the flip side of that coin is maybe they're only listening for that amount of time because they're just bored, senseless of hearing the same songs all the time. Mm. Maybe if we played more songs, they might listen for longer. And I suppose it just, someone had to make a decision. So he was the program director and he'd go, this is my way. If you don't like it, bugger off. And that really was the attitude. Okay, this is how we're going to run the radio station. Very much in a way of the Sir Alex Ferguson style of probably running Man United. Very successful, but, you know, okay, he was definitely in charge. And for the most part, it was unbelievably successful. So then, you know, when he leaves there, and then he was obviously taught, he was doing some freelance work, consultancy work with EMAP at the time. So Andrea Vidler, my old managing director from Capital, had gone over there and was now running Magic and had put together this, I mean, awesome all-female team that was running, you know, Magic. And it was really good. They're great people to work with. And Parky was this consultant. And him and I had known each other clearly a long time, since 1987. He had said, look, I've got this idea. There's a hole in the market for a really great sort of, in a way, MOR station that's really well done. We think that could be Magic. Why don't you come and do breakfast? All the things that made Magic really good, you have to be honest, were Parky. Well, and a great, you know, Andrea Vidler and her management team doing the business side of things. But in terms of programming, Parky got it right. And he knew which songs to play and how to play it. And then ever since, really, it's the no one's done anything better than he did there. It's all, he laid the foundation for what that station should be. The station went to number one. The breakfast show went to number one. You know, you think, wow, we have Magic, Little Magic 105.4, had managed to go and beat the mighty Capital and everyone else, and suddenly you were number one in the rating. So he knows his stuff when it comes to radio. So he goes over, you know, I mean, Ashley Tabor, I mean, God, Ashley, you won't mind me saying, Ashley was our tea boy on a Saturday morning, yeah, for me and Patman and what have you. And what was always lovely about Ashley really liked radio. So it's really good to have a boss who clearly likes the medium and isn't just there for the business. So loves radio, and he always loved radio and music and entertainment. So that's really good. And obviously, he managed to be in the fortunate situation later on to be able to put together you know, a consortium and buy out GCAP, which was getting a bit tired and needed a kick up the arse, let's be honest, at the time. It had been run down a bit. And off they went with Global Radio and have done an amazing job from a business point of view of creating lots of national brands. You know, Heart is a really strong brand. Capital is a really strong brand. Obviously, LBC, enormous now. Yep. And Classic and, you know, all the... They've done really well. But in terms of what I sometimes go, is this entertaining to listen to anymore? OK, is this fun? Do you turn on and go, what are they going to say next? What are they going to play next? There is no surprise anymore, really, with what's going to happen on the radio. I think they have a really weak breakfast show on Capital now. Sadly, all those radio stations sound very contrived, I think, is actually a good word, sadly, because they're... All the right bits are in all the right places, but there's no surprise anymore. Mm. You've got no, and so nothing crazy is ever going to happen. And it's all very consistent and very good. But where are the mavericks anymore? Where's someone that you're going to go, like, you know, where's the Tarrant that actually would say some stuff that would make you belly laugh? Nothing makes you belly laugh at breakfast anymore. You've got a team of sycophants sort of pretending to laugh around you with stuff that really isn't funny. But, you know, Tarrant would say stuff that was funny that would make you cry with laughter funny, and then play a song. And he wasn't the greatest DJ. He couldn't jock intros, he couldn't do that, but who gives a monkeys? He was entertaining. And I, you know, I'd say Frank Skinner's entertaining on the radio. And I listen to him on a Saturday morning. I go to Battersea Park, I walk my dog, I come back, I sit in the car some. I sit in my car and I listen to some of the stuff he's talking about with his team. And he's funny. I mean, funny, ha-ha. And then, oh, I'll play a song. That's obviously a different kind of radio than the normal strip show radio. But even that has got a little bit contrived.
And am I right in saying you had an offer to go to Global a few years ago?
I was talking with Parky because... look, after I'd had my court case and what have you, you know, as my QC had said, you know, in his summing up on my thing, he said, look, you know, when you go to court like this, it's quite toxic. And I think part of being on the radio, we have to understand, is that people, OK, hopefully you're good at what you do. But also, I like that idea that radio, you create, you are the friend on the radio to people sitting at home or in their car or wherever they're listening to the show. You become their friend on the radio. Yeah. And obviously, if you've been through a situation like mine, then radio stations employ you because they think you can be that friend on the radio. And, you know, I think a lot of radio stations are so paranoid about legal cases and, you know, potentially getting any bad press or taking a risk anymore that I think, to be fair, after it, I mean, I've got to be honest, I mean, Bauer were just bloody crap at the whole thing. They were. And actually, Global... and the guys there, Ashley and Parky and what have you, were really lovely and what have you. The first person to take me out for dinner, actually, after my arrest was Parky, to be fair. He called me straight up, come on, let's go out and what have you. And actually, a lot of the guys there were brilliant. And so after the case, it's interesting, you think, because, you know, that ended in, that was the December 2015.
Yeah.
Here we are talking now. It's the end of July 2020. I to start with, I thought I need to take some time out because that had been a stressful experience. And
I think you set out, outside court, didn't you? You know, I want to get back and be a broadcaster again now. But
I did. And partly, but I needed some time off. I needed a bit of time out. I really did, just to regroup and just have a workout. Because there's no doubt, by the time of the end of my time at Magic, I was bored out of my brains, really. It was because there's only so much Michael Bublé a man can play. And Lionel Richie, much as I love both those artists. But, you know, when it's the relentlessness of the whole thing and that sort of, in a way, having to slightly... patronizing way of broadcasting, it was sort of good, but then you go, okay, where can we go with this now? And we couldn't really go anywhere else with it to a certain extent, apart from just do more of the same every day. And once a station like that finds its groove, you kind of go, you're just playing the same songs every day, really, maybe a slightly different order, but you are. And the whole thing, it's like, okay, we found the formula, it's just, why change it? Just do the same thing every single day. So where were we going to go? And weirdly, I ended up, there's always been a business side of me. And a friend of mine contacted me and he'd got a load of money to build an app. And I'd been involved with this game called Beat the Intro, which we'd end up launching as an interactive DVD on Capital back in, I think, 2005. And it had done, I mean, that was the tech then, interactive DVDs instead of, because PlayStations hadn't been invented and Xboxes. So smart anyway, speakers, but that, you know, it did really well for about a year. And then, of course, the tech changed. And so literally, it's a, you know, sales just fell off a cliff. That was the end of that one. But the game was always good about basically name that tune. Here's a bit of a song. What is it? People love playing that game. We've played it on the radio for donkey's years. He said, I've got a load of money to build an app. Would you please come and work with me? I really need your help because you understand that side of things and how to engage audiences. And that's what I did for, well, about 3 years. And then that led to me starting my own company and trying to, and we're building something new now that I'm not going to talk about now, but we will do probably in about, I think, about 6 months to a year's time. And it will be interesting. Yeah, it's in the music space. It's in the entertainment space. And it's something that you go, this is just missing. And so we're going to fill the hole. But in the meantime, you know, look, Reedy and Tony Prince called me up and said, come and do this. And it just felt like the right time. It felt like an interesting thing to go and do as well. Because just going back on air and going, hey, it's Monday afternoon, how are you doing today? Honestly, I just thought, I just can't do that anymore. I really can't. And but this sounded interesting. And although stations like United DJs are, it definitely look a small niche radio at the moment, they're clearly just from the feedback we're getting. I mean, I was blown away by the feedback from doing the Heritage Chart on Sunday, just how many, you know, requests on Facebook, how many people are listening, how many people. I mean, it's suddenly you go, oh my goodness, this is, and people from all around the world, which is fascinating. You know, suddenly mates, Paul, you know, Stefan Dennis, who plays Paul Robinson in Neighbours, he's one of my bestie mates. So he's listening, and he's listening, it's late night in Australia, in Melbourne, you kind of go, and he's like texting me, mate, I'm listening to you. I'm going, this is so random. My mate's driving his car in Chicago, taking his daughter to like soccer practice and what have you, and he's listening in his, and I'm going, this is brilliant, right? And then a mate in South Africa who was on Luxembourg with me called Tony Blewett, there he is. So he's suddenly listening. And that's, of course, what it can, tech can allow you to have this sort of global reach. Yeah. Mm. How you monetize a global reach is slightly more awkward, of course.
Yes.
You know, probably just be big in your own market and monetize that. So stations like UDJ and other internet stations, their problem is, how do you monetize it? If you go to any media agency and say, right, okay, we need to get a sponsor, a brand sponsor, okay, who's going to sponsor the Heritage Chart and what have you, got this great idea and Fox is doing it and blah, blah, blah. And they're going to go, it all comes down to numbers. So how many people are listening and what's your cost per thousand? And, you know, and then when you get down to the numbers, that's where the bigger groups have in a way got it completely sussed. They can tell you how many numbers and they've got these big numbers. And what radio might start to find now is, in the same way that it's gone with online and with internet shopping, and, you know, smaller branded pop-up ads are coming here that are more targeted to the people either shopping online, and now it'll be listening on the radio. That's probably what we'll have a lot more of, and that's probably how we're going to monetize these things so that they can actually survive, because there's a need for them. There's definitely a market out there for them, and there's a hole for them. So it's nice that people can have something, because radio is still great company and great entertainment. And what I found listening to UDJ, for example, was there are some really great shows on that by some tremendous DJs who can talk. They have a brain. They've got something to say. Their egos have maybe been left behind many years ago. They're never going to say, hey, I'm wearing a really cool shirt today. They're not saying anything naff anymore. So a lot of these guys are playing some good songs with an energy and a feel and maybe an excitement that you don't tend to hear anymore. It's very hard for a jock now. And I sort of go, how do these young jocks who are working for Heart Capital, what have you, how do they get their experience? Because I was lucky to work at a little station where we were paid sod all, really. And so because of that, you know, Norman Bilton, our boss at Radio Wife, and sort of knew he was going to have quite a flow of DJs coming in and out who were going to cut their teeth. Some were good, some were bad. But you could, in a way, get away with a lot more in those days. And if you were good, you'd rise to the top. And if you're bad, you'd sort of crash and burn. I wonder now, though, a lot of these guys have never grown up with that or been able to go to small stations where they literally can muck about, because even when they're on little stations, they were controlled by the big stations and told what to say, pretty much. And right, you got to do this, got to do that, got to do that. It's very contrived. And so where's the idea of someone just opening the mic and saying something entertaining or making a great observation or an emotional thought or something that connects you, the audience or the listener, with what they're saying, either in a funny, a sentimental or an interested way. I don't think that really happens that much anymore. I'll be really honest. I wish it did, but I never really hear that during the day. It's just background to a certain extent. It's slightly like I'm on Spotify, but someone's every now and again saying something in between a playlist. Because I know what the playlist is going to be on all these stations now. We all know what it's going to be. You know, if I turn on Heart now, I can guarantee within the next hour, I will hear Pink. I will hear CeCe Peniston. I will hear Bruno Mars. I will. I guarantee it. As a business model, they've got it really worked out. And I think what's hard is, I think if it was like, now you want to dial back in a bit of the excitement. So you go, now can we make it exciting again? Now can we make it interesting again? And, you know, is United DJs going to challenge these guys? Clearly it's not. We're a small radio station. But I'll tell you what's interesting. It's interesting to go to work with a bunch of really fun people whose views on music are considered. So when we do the Heritage Chart, for example, we ask all the jocks, OK, of all these records, which ones do you like? Which ones are you getting great feedback from your audience? What do they like? What do they hate? What are the comments? What do you think? What do you feel? And those things all go into helping us, for example, come up with our Heritage Chart. Now, it's interesting. Someone said to me, a chart's still relevant now. I think we love a chart. Everyone loves a chart. I think just commercial radio and Radio 1 slightly felt that because the way people consumed music now, you weren't buying records anymore, you're streaming music, charts weren't as important. But I think that's, I don't think that's right. I think if you, it's, kids love to know what's the most popular song. They might not be buying records anymore, but they're still loving records. And the chart was just always an indicator of what are the most popular songs any particular week in the country. And whether I've bought it as a vinyl single, a cast single, a CD, I downloaded it, or I'm just streaming it, I'm still only doing that to the songs I like, right? So, yeah. So whatever is the number one stream song is the most popular song that week. That's how it works. Yeah. So I still think they could be as relevant now if you decided, right, this is really important, we're going to go for it, we're going to talk about the number one, we're going to make it a big deal.
And you're clearly so passionate about radio and about music still. I wonder whether that period in your life 5 years ago made you stop and reassess things, and whether you've kind of come out of that with different mindset on life and people and radio and everything generally.
Well, COVID's been a really, lockdown's been a really interesting time for people, because I think it's allowed people to just stop for a moment actually and think, gosh, I was running along at 1,000 miles an hour. Do I need to be? Could I slow down? And I think there, although...
And you had that kind of 5 years ago almost enforced on you, didn't you?
I did. I completely did. And as I said to you earlier, I was getting slightly bored of, you know, magic and what have you, sort of in a way Groundhog Day, which it kind of was. And so, yeah, that all stopped. And then I did have a chance to rethink. It made me at that time reassess, right, who's been a good friend, who's been a bad friend, who's been a good charity, who's dropped me like a stone, which have been good radio companies, who's been a pain in the ass and just weak and pathetic. You do literally, it gives you a really good chance to assess a lot of things there. And then also work out maybe what you want to do. And because I've been on this since 1985, this amazing treadmill, like going literally at 1,000 miles an hour. And it had been going really well, you know, from, you know, Wyvern to Luxy to Capital to it all gone really well, and telly and lala. And it was actually, you get to a point where you go, okay, now here's a chance to reset. What do I really like? If you're going along really well and, you know, you're getting paid really well for it, you kind of think, OK, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. So but there are moments where you're thinking, I'd like to get off this treadmill a little bit. But it was hard to. People have contracted you and they're expecting their pound of flesh, which I've always tried to deliver. The treadmill came to a grinding halt. For 29 years, I've been like going at it 6 or 7 days a week. And it was all very interesting, entertaining, and I had a great life out of it. But it was a really well-paid Groundhog Day, but it was Groundhog Day. You know, so much of it was just, oh my God, here we go again. And I think also, with that young men's mentality, you're always trying to do well, always trying to make sure that people liked you, you were doing a great job and, you know, being popular and saying the right thing. And, you know, I look back at how I was, for example, you know, when we were doing Pop Idol, we were definitely cast on Pop Idol. So, you know, I had my role, Nikki had a role, Pete had his role, Simon had his role. And you kind of go, God, if I went back now and did that, I would be so different on that show. But in many respects, what's interesting about where I am now, I don't give a stuff about most of this stuff. So I don't really give a stuff. No, when I say I don't give a stuff about radio, I really like radio. But you know what? If I sat down and talked with a program controller, I'm not going to have to kiss ass or just say what he's expecting me to say. I'd want to have an honest conversation. If we ended up, that meant that I could be on air somewhere or do something else, that'd be great. But if we didn't agree, it's not going to happen. And I wouldn't pretend anymore. And I think it's quite refreshing to get to that position where you don't give a stuff. I still love radio and I will always love radio. The problem is there's an awful lot of blandness out there at the moment. And I would say maybe what radio needs to do now is try and sit there and go, can we stop being so bland? Okay, and let's not be scared of the streaming platforms. Let's work out why people listen to the radio. It's not just the music. They wanted to hear the sound. You know, every radio station has a personality. Capital has a different personality to Heart. Heart has a different one to Kiss, Magic, Smooth. They all got Radio One. They've all got a different personality to them. And it's a bit like choosing your friends. You choose the ones that you think you have the most in common with and want to hang out with. Everyone wants to be loved, but sometimes it's good that people don't love you all the time. They might go, this person does my head in. But at least they have an opinion about you. The worst thing is they go, that's all right. There's an awful lot of radio around now that you go, it's all right. And it's all done well, but it doesn't make you go, oh my God, this guy's brilliant, or this girl is fantastic, or they're witty, or they know their stuff, or, you know, it's just a noise. That's sad, really, because for someone that really has grown up listening to amazing radio and then trying to do great radio, I'd like to be able to get in my car and just hear some stuff that's just brilliant.
Well, hopefully you'll get some more good feedback about your new show. So Sundays, 1 till 3, it's the Heritage Chart on United DJs. And are you doing that live? You're doing that from home? You're doing that from studios? Are you recording? How's that working?
No, we're doing it live from their studios. And, you know, it's really good getting... I love being back in a studio. There's a great energy in a good studio. Remember the first time I ever went into the Radio Wyvern studio was the first proper, you know, radio studio I ever went into. And I walked into this... as old all ILR studios were. They were fantastic and way over-engineered. They were beautiful. It's like, wow. So I went into this lovely thing, which was rather nice compared to what was my university radio studio. And then the jock, this guy called Sam, he went, shh, just going to do a link. And he put the mic open. That red light came on. And it was like the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. It's like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is going out live. People can hear this. And I got to be honest, even on Sunday afternoon, when you think I've been doing this 35 years, when I got in that studio, I sat there and there's a buzz and the hum of the equipment. And then you go, right, here we go. Switch over. 3, 2, 1, go. And you hit that first jingle. Oh, my God, it was like electricity all over again. It really was. And that doctor jingle, I'm talking over the top. It's like we're back on air. I was excited. I really was excited. Wow. I was excited for 2 hours. And when I came off at the end, I went, God, that was bloody brilliant. Loved it. It was. And I haven't actually felt that for a long time. And that was, it was really exciting to have that feeling. But, and I felt like I'd been on, and you can, what's interesting now is with social media, here's the good thing about modern tech. And there's so many good things about modern tech. But one of the great things is if you just have your Facebook feed on or whatever, you know, Twitter feed on, and you just see, you can instantly see this response coming flying back at you. You go, wow, it's alive. We are alive. We're live on air. We're alive around the world. People are listening live and they're feeding back live. And that's a real buzz. It's really exciting.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on, Foxy. It's great to talk to you. Or should I say Dr. Fox? I'll bring you back your full name.
Thank you very much indeed. All right. Nice to speak to you, Stuart.
That's Neil Fox talking to us here on the Radio Today programme, just ahead of David Lloyd's Radio Moments. A reminder about Clean Feed, a great way to connect in decent quality just using your browser. Ideal for broadcasting from remote locations, getting guests onto your show or podcast, and much more besides. It's really simple to use and the quality is great. Won't cost you anything to get started. Just 30 seconds and you'll be signed up and doing your first live interview or getting on air for your show. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net. Radio
Moments. It was good to see Tony Blackburn tweeting this week to remind us that it all started for him this week in 1964.
Yes, indeed. This little girl of mine has a good old blossom of us from the Everly Brothers. 9.5 minutes past the hour of 7 o'clock now.
How about a kiss before breakfast?
Do you mind, honestly? Apart from being a little bit early, makes me handshake. Number 22, David and Jonathan. And talking about Radio Caroline, it's really great. I've been kind of going around the Essex area particularly lately, and it's great to hear so many of you saying how much you're enjoying the programmes from Radio Caroline, and the fact that you say that you get loads and loads of variety in pop, and indeed, you say you love the idea of us playing pop all day out here on Caroline. You say you love tuning in. And, well, it's very encouraging indeed, and it's great to really kind of come out there and meet you all at dances and things like that. I really have enjoyed myself, and I'd like to say a big hello now to, let me see, I can find it here. Where is it? Paul and Glenn of the Pirate's Den, it says here. And it's this week is going to Anne McDonald of 288 Broomfield Road, Chelmsford, and also gorgeous, delectable Rita Tyler of 117 Lady Lane in Chelmsford in the county of Essex, of course. So gorgeous, delectable Rita Tyler, especially for you. It's a hot shot for the top.
When was it that we stopped reading out full listener addresses? Gorgeous, delectable Tony Blackburn there, who jumped on board the Pirate Radio Caroline this week in 1964. He answered an ad in the press and his long career began. To 1997 now, and this week that year, a new voice on Radio 1.
Weekday mornings from 4 till 7, a man in a studio with headphones on. The Early Bit with Chris Moyles.
Verve and the drugs don't work. I listened to Clive Warren, he was talking about the Verve earlier on. I know that, because I was listening to Clive Warren earlier on. One big happy Radio 1 DJ family here. Together in the same house and may and sleep together in the same disc jockey bed. When Simon Mayo gets out in the morning, Clive Warren's just getting back in. When Nicky Campbell's getting up, I'm just getting in. Sometimes Nicky and I stay and have a bit of a cuddle. Not often, but sometimes, you know, these things do happen. Oh, look, there's Pig flying past the Radio 1 studios.
Chris Moyles, who began his Radio 1 career this week 23 years ago, the saviour of Radio 1, hosting the 4 o'clock in the morning slot. Michael Aspel was a huge Capital name for a generation. He hosted mid-mornings until this week in 1984.
There we have. That's Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show and the Ballad of Lucy Jordan, a sad old tale. Let's hear some good news for change from Sue Cook with even more. Super
Savers. And prices at the greengrocer are much better today, in fact. And today's not a bad day at all for the shopping. Lettuce, potatoes, cabbage, sprouts and turkey wings. And so let's see what she comes up with.
Very good. That'll be a little later in the programme. OK, now it certainly is 8 minutes to ten, even a few seconds past. And here's Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. And something called Make Me Smile in brackets, Come Up and See Me. So we dedicate this, obviously, to Mae West.
Michael Aspel on Capital with a lady to do the shopping news. He went on to host Sundays for a short while before moving on. Radio 2 was seen as a natural descendant of the BBC Light programme, which began as the Forces programme closed this week in 1945. Happy 75th anniversary.
Good morning, everyone. This is the BBC Light programme on wavelengths of 1,500 and 261 metres. It's the first time we've said those words, BBC Light programme, which we hope are going to mean for you now and in the days to come all that is best in radio entertainment from 9 o'clock in the morning to midnight. Now I'm handing over the microphone to a colleague who will bring you the news. Japanese warships damaged in Tuesday's big carrier ball attacks on the inland sea.
It's fascinating listening to that, isn't it? Because they'd stopped the wartime practice of saying who the newsreader was and were wondering out quite what they had to say instead. On the first day of the Light programme, we had a transatlantic quiz, followed by Alf's Dream by W.W. Jacobs, and then a Variety Bandbox. The front page of the Radio Times was devoted to all the new programming, and they were stressing that the broadcasting you will hear in the coming weeks will mark a great stride forward towards the goal we've set ourselves. It will not take us to the end of the road. And it goes on to say there are many problems of production, of programme building, of the best use of techniques, and also saying that staff are, of course, returning from wartime service. So, do you know, it's a little bit like coming back from COVID, isn't it, when you listen to those accounts? Hello to the BBC Light programme this week in 1945. The Light programme became Radio 2 22 years later, which had this new jingle logo 7 years ago. Sunday evenings used to be owned by the BBC, but the network chart was to build commercial radio audiences and start the path to commercial radio's dominance of Sunday nights. Kit Jensen was its first presenter, and his stint ended this week in 1993.
Rising three to take number 10 this week, Danny Minogue, This Is It. Falling 1 to 9, M People, brand new at number 8, Freddie Mercury, Living on My Own. Rising 4 to 7, Roxette, Almost Unreal. Hathaway falls 3 to 6, no change at 5 for Chaka with Flyers. Brand new at 4, the highest new entry, Madonna, Rain. Falling 1 to 3, Gabrielle, and up 2 to number 2, Four Non-Blondes, What's Up. So straight in at number 1, and still there, Pray from the hottest act of the 90s so far. Take that, take top slot for a third week. This is David Kid Jensen, and from next week, I'll be tuned into the network chart just like you. After 9 years, which is roughly 84,240 minutes, or 5,054,400 seconds, or 18,720 hits later, I'm handing the network chart record race baton to Neil Fox, and I'm sure he'll run 9 years more. Good luck, Foxy. So until we meet again, take that, remain.
Network chart number one.
Farewell to the network chart with Kit Jensen 27 years ago. I gather he's having a biography released soon, so watch out for that. I know about it because I've written it. There we go. So with Brian Matthew joining the BBC 65 years ago.
Bud Steinhaus' interpretation for guitar of that gorgeous melody, Getting Sentimental Over You. Getting Sentimental Over You. Well, that's how they used to express themselves once upon a time. In the 60s, with a rare economy of words, this becomes I Want You, which is the last title this week from the Cresters.
New names announced for the BBC networks 53 years ago.
247, Radio 1, non-stop music.
North Sound 1, launching in Aberdeen 39 years ago.
We're Britain's 27th independent radio station, and we're broadcasting to northeast Scotland from our studios in Kingsgate, Aberdeen. We hope you like our programmes and will tune in to us every day from 6 in the morning until 8 at night.
And Team Talk 252 on Longwave closing 18 years ago.
All right, 40 seconds remaining, but less than that. And not only less than that, in the World Cup. Who was that? Ireland against whom?
Oh, Spain.
Somebody.
Yeah. But less than 40 seconds remaining in the life of Team Talk 252.
It's very tragic, isn't it?
It is, but we're... heartened by the fact that senior management have told us that they'll do everything they can.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David, and thanks also to my guests this week, Steve Austins and Neil Fox as well. Join us next week for something similar about the radio industry.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassio.